Hello, and welcome to the 90s Kids Movie Pod. We are your hosts, Joe.
Hello.
Stephanie.
Hello.
And I'm Max. We are three millennials who took A-level media studies, so you know we are highly qualified to talk about films. This is the podcast for children of the 90s. Join us as we rewatch the films that shaped our childhood. This episode, we are exploring Die Another Day, a classic James Bond movie, recommended by our very own James Lamond.
That'll be my father. Yeah. Who I know did not like this film when he took me to see it.
Oh, I'll be honest. So, for context, Joe recommended this in our last episode. And I think I have so many questions, but more so for your parents who let you watch this film at such a young age. But without giving too much preamble, Joe, do you want to introduce why you chose this film?
Right. So for those who aren't familiar with this certain film, Die Another Day is the 2002 epic James Bond film, which is Pierce Brosnan's last outing as Bond. Basically, Pierce Brosnan's stint as Bond started off very well in GoldenEye and then got progressively worse to the point where it just gets really cheesy. It's the reason I've seen this film so much, it's so nostalgic for me, is because it's like the first film that I ever had on DVD.
Yeah.
So, and like Max was saying in the previous podcast, I abused that DVD. I would watch it all the time. I would, you know, like put on all the different audio commentary, all the different subtitles, go all the on the behind the scenes extras, and just get as much use of it as I can, because it's the only DVD I had, and it was like a toy almost. So I've seen it a shocking amount of times, I must say.
Were you as shocked as I was, Steph, when Joe recommended this? I think it's just because when I think of like nostalgic films, there's not that many action films I think of. So I think I was surprised, but at the same time, James Bond and Pierce Brosnan, it does resonate like something about the 90s for me.
Yeah, I mean, when I think of Joe Lamond, I immediately think of James Bond.
This is true.
So, no, I was quite shocked when you suggested this, because I guess we were, what, 11, 12 when this film came out?
Yeah, we would have been about 12. I think we'd started in year 7.
Yeah, so to say this is one of your most nostalgic films, I thought was quite surprising. But I feel like I'm seeing a bit more into the soul of Joe Lamond now that I know that this film holds such a dear place in your heart.
That's a dangerous place to go.
Yeah, I think that's what I was doing, as well as, you know, thoroughly enjoying this film, which we'll get into. I was unpicking each scene and thinking, young Joe Lamond, how impressionable. What would this have, like, imparted onto his young brain? But maybe I was overthinking it. I think I just would never have guessed that you liked this. And it's, yeah, maybe I should have done, because you do resemble Pierce Brosnan somewhat, don't you? I guess so.
Well, I'd just like to point out that hats off to Pierce Brosnan for showcasing the talent of having a really hairy chest and not giving a fuck.
That chest was out in full force in this film.
It was. It took no prisoners.
It's a secondary character.
I'm sure it had a credit at the end.
Yeah. Was there a stunt chest?
Had its own makeup artist.
Yeah, I did notice the chest there, but maybe, I mean, this was 2002, but in the 90s, was it like a thing for chest hair? I'd imagine it was in like the 70s maybe, but was Pierce Brosnan bringing it back? I love how we're jumping straight into chest hair, but I feel like we need to. It was such a feature, wasn't it?
It's the elephant in the room of this Bond film, definitely.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know whether it's a thing. I don't know whether that was a... I can't say as an 11-year-old girl I particularly picked up on things like that at the time. I don't know.
No.
As an 11-year-old boy, Joe, did you pick up on it at the time? Or?
No, I had no idea. What I did pick up on is his Jesus look that they've got all the way at the start of the film. So, so it starts off with... So in James Bond films, you've always got some kind of... almost like a cold open at the start. There's a mission that happens and it's like, yeah, nailed it. And then the rest of the film carries on. Well, this is a bit different in that he gets captured and spends the credits of the film... getting tortured in a North Korean prison to Madonna. I'm not sure what was worse for him. Hearing Madonna singing for 3 minutes or the poisonous scorpions. And he grows out his long hair and his beard. And it's quite a shocking look.
He looks like Tom Hanks in Castaway.
He does.
He does. Yeah, my notes really for that. Does. My notes for that is that James Wan survives 15 months in a North Korean prisoner camp and emerges looking like the second coming of Jesus Christ.
Yeah, it is one of those white savior tropes, I suppose, that you get in films like that.
Yeah,
that you think you've escaped in the 90s, but no, here we are, 2002, still happening.
Yeah.
Did I have some thoughts on the hair? So, did you notice when he finally escapes and he goes into the hotel and he goes up to his room to freshen up and he immediately has a pristine haircut?
Yeah.
Who's cutting his hair? I mean, he would be absolutely fine in lockdown, wouldn't he? Like, he managed to go from basically looking like scraggly Jesus to looking very suave. And I was thinking, when did he learn how to cut hair?
After escaping confinement, he basically manages to swim 2 miles to shore to Hong Kong, booking in at like a 5-star hotel, and then gives himself a professional haircut with like a shaver that's designed for prepubescent teenagers.
I think that was his skill that I was most impressed at. That and the crazy surfing skills right from the beginning. I laughed so much when he took his helmet off and it was like, yes, that was clearly Pierce Brosnan surfing those waves at the beginning.
Yeah, it sets the bar, doesn't it?
Yeah, it sets the bar for another shocking surfing scene further on in the film, which I think is the worst case of CGI I've ever experienced.
Yeah, I picked up on that as well. That's so funny.
That's aged like milk for anyone interested.
That was, I think, when it looked most like a video game. And I was like, I can totally see you playing this bit of the film as a video game.
Yeah, but that's the thing. Like, I remember as a kid thinking to myself, you know, movies must be made so that they sell video games. I don't know why I think that. I don't know why, sorry, I thought that. But I think it's just because so many video games came out of movies and they weren't necessarily good. But I think I associated it more with James Bond because of GoldenEye on Nintendo 64, maybe, but yeah.
Well, that's it, because GoldenEye is still like a classic Nintendo game that people always, you know, if you're going to have a Nintendo 64, what are you going to play? Like, I don't know, Banjo-Kazooie and GoldenEye?
Yeah, there are only 6 games, weren't there?
So I think they must have at this point been aware, because they bring out a lot of Bond games over Pierce Brosnan's course of being James Bond. There were quite a few.
Yeah.
So they could have easily at this point been like, yeah, we're going to have 2 cars on ice shooting torpedoes at each other. Can you imagine the sales on that?
Mm. I mean, speaking of surfing and sea and everything like that, what did we all make of Halle Berry? Now, I'm aware that this was peak Halle Berry phenomena, wasn't it? Everyone loved Halle Berry. And this was when, that's what I remember as a child. I just remember the hysteria around her. But, I mean, Steph, what did you think of Halle Berry's character Jinx in the film?
I really liked her. I thought she was great. She's like the quintessential Bond girl. So we first meet her when she's, you know, coming out of the sea in her bikini and she looks incredible. And yeah, I thought she had quite a few cheeky lines and she was quite a badass. I think I read somewhere that she won an award for female butt kicker at like the Kids' Choice Awards, something like that, which I would say kind of sums her up in this film. I really liked her. Mm. What about you guys?
Yeah, I thought her character was better than James Bond, especially in this film. He just seemed kind of... You always get to a point in James Bond where they've had like multiple actors portray him, and in the final kind of films of an actor doing it, you can kind of see they look a bit old and tired. And it was kind of refreshing to see Halle Berry do basically his job, but better. And slightly less cheesy dialogue than Pierce Brosnan in this film, I'd say.
I can't believe could not get over that Pierce Brosnan was 49 in this film.
Oh, wow. Like, I didn't know that.
Yeah, because when I was watching it, I was like, how old is it? So I had to Google it. And I don't know why it shocked me so much, but 49 just seems... I mean, how old is Daniel Craig? He's getting on a bit now for James Bond, but 49 seemed quite old for James Bond.
Yeah, I think it was Roger Moore was like close to that age when he started playing Bond. He was really old by the end. They've got this thing of having him be portrayed by quite an older actor. I don't really understand why, but I think he looked good for 49.
Oh yeah, I mean, said that. He looked very fit for 49, but it just then freaked me. It kind of creeped me out a little bit when, especially when he meets Rosamund Pike, who I was also googling.
Yeah.
And she's 21 in this film, so he is double her age plus. And when they were sort of getting I couldn't get past it. I was like, it's just creeping me out a bit too much.
Yeah.
It's really hard to watch now, isn't it? Those kind of things. It's just, and I think there's so many things that are excused because it's James Bond that he does. I mean, I'm not talking about, obviously, the old Sean Connery ones and all that kind of stuff. You don't want to rewatch those films now because they're not aged well. But there's certain things like, oh, you know, he's a womanizer, yeah, whatever. And there's a new girl every film, and you know they get younger and younger while he gets older. It's a bit horrible.
Yeah, and I mean, I thought, because I think Halle Berry is maybe like 37, 38, so that felt fine. That was like, okay, yeah. And she, I don't know, she seemed to have a bit more agency. So it was like, oh, okay, yeah, those two together, fine. But yeah, I think Rosamund Pike looks very young. And then also knowing she was 21 in this film, and I knew it was coming, like, when her character got introduced, I was like, I know they're going to end up sleeping together. And I was like, just brace yourself for the cringe moment.
Mm.
Yeah, I think I liked Jinx, Halle Berry's character, a bit more than Rosamund Pike's. I think Rosamund Pike's a really good actress. But I think I just liked the fierceness of Halle Berry's character, and that she wasn't just a typical Bond girl in the respect that she was... you know, just all over James, and you know, James was just this character that, you know, she couldn't resist necessarily. I liked that she kind of had a bit of give and take to her, whereas Rosamund Pike's character, I didn't like. I think the reason why I didn't like her is because she jumped into bed with James quite easily. But at the same time, I think maybe that was her angle because she was the agent. So yeah, maybe so.
Yeah, it was a bit of a blink and you miss it. Okay, she's gone from saying, I'm not going to sleep with you, I know your game, to then they're basically undressing and getting into bed. And I was like, did I just like zone out for a second and miss something? That bit of the film felt really weird to me. And I don't know if it was because I missed something, but... yeah, she can't. I guess it is her character's motive, though. She was double crossing him, wasn't she? So
yeah, exactly.
I know what you mean, though. It did feel a bit not forced, but very quick. I like that when you've got the thing of when Pierce Brosnan and when James Bond and Jinx are together, and then the next morning he's left in bed and she's out and she's an agent and she's gone without him. Yeah. That was a nice little twist.
Yeah,
she's looking out for herself, and it's quite cool.
Yeah, no, definitely. She seems a lot more in control in this film than maybe James Bond does.
Yeah, I heard that she was meant to. They were in development of having her have her own spin-off. I'm not sure if that's true.
Yeah,
that would have been quite interesting.
According to Wikipedia, there was a planned spin-off, but it was cancelled. But it basically was Jinx's character, because Apparently it was received so positively that they were planning a spin-off with Halle Berry.
Cool.
There you go. You can see why.
Yeah, I mean, what has she been in recently? I feel like you say, Max, this was kind of the height of Halle Berry, like, being in everything. Everyone absolutely loved her. And then I don't feel like she's really been in anything recently.
I think the last thing that I saw her in was Kingsman. Did you guys see her in that?
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah, apart from that, I don't think she's been doing much. Maybe she's just enjoying all of her millions and millions of pounds.
Yeah, fair play.
But what did you guys think of Toby Stevens, who plays Gustav Greaves or Graves? Graves. So he's the ginger nut.
Yeah, he's the Bond villain of this film, isn't he?
Yeah.
Would we say he's ginger?
He wasn't obviously like Ron Weasley ginger in this film. I think they toned it down a bit, but in real life he seems to be a bit more ginger. It's weird. I wasn't sold on his depiction of the Bond villain in this film at all, really. But I've seen him in others. I've not seen him in anything else apart from the new Lost in Space TV series, and he kills it in that. So I know he's capable of more than this. But very smarmy English. He's very punchable. That's probably a good thing for a Bond villain.
Yeah, why? Why definitely. Do you feel that he isn't sort of quintessential Bond villain?
I don't know. There's one massive flaw with the plot. In that most of the times, you know, the Bond villain is this kind of genius villainous character doing it for his reasons, but still, in this, he doesn't seem to be that intelligent. There was multiple times in this film where he could have just had James Bond killed, but he invites him to the unveiling of this evil thing that he didn't have to sneak in. Pierce Brosnan, James Bond did not have to sneak in.
He was on the guest list.
He saw him and he invited him to it. He invited him to foil his plans. That's just ridiculous.
Yeah.
I did think right at the beginning of the film, there's this, like, before even the credits, there's a scene where the villain has the machine gun and he literally is pointing it at James Bond, and it's like, we could end this film right now.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah, he does have a lot of plot armor, James Bond, unfortunately.
he does. Yeah, I think the biggest one at the beginning for me was where I just thought, well, the film could have just ended in the first 10 minutes, was where he had that huge air tank fight scene with Uzis and a flamethrower. And then he clings onto that bell at the end and he says this, you know, saved by the bell line. I was like, oh my god, that's so cool. But then, yeah, like, so he's just killed what, the leader, the general, the senior general of North Korea's son, who doesn't look that bothered. And he's like, oh, you just killed my son. He'd be dead at that point, wouldn't he? But he's like, no, I'm going to imprison you for 14 months. And I didn't get. But at the same time, I know you could always make that argument of, well, there'd be no film, would there, Max?
Yeah, you'd think a firing squad would have sorted it out straight away. But I suppose they ended up trading him. So I don't know if they were holding out. I don't know. I don't know why. Yeah, that's a bit of a shame. So what did you guys think of the Bond villain?
So I thought that he looked just how you imagine a Bond villain would look. Like Joe said, he'd got a very punchable face. He'd kind of got that very posh boy, like, smarmy, I'm better than you face. And I thought he acted the part really well. I liked the scene where they were having the fencing match. I thought he'd got that really good sort of, he was trying to be polite, but there was that seething, like, bubbling under the surface, like, pure rage that James Bond was beating him. I thought he was really good. Again, I don't know if I missed this. When did they decide to swap the DNA over?
Right, so, yeah, that's a major plot point, is that at the start of the film, James Bond is infiltrating this North Korean camp, and he basically, you think he's killed the general of North Korea's son. It turns out that he survived. We don't know how. That's never explained. But we meet this English Bond villain, and it turns out that he is the North Korea general's son, and he's had like a DNA
transplant.
Yeah, basically DNA transplant. And it's kind of explained through the henchman Zhao, who is currently undergoing the same process. I think there's a scene where on screen they meet for the first time, and they say, like, I think one of them in the actual the suit, the dreaming suit, because yeah. One of the side effects is they don't sleep, and he says, "How are you getting on with it?" and this kind of stuff. And then one of them says, "Oh, you know, James Bond was this close to me. He doesn't realise we're totally going to fool him. Oh, by the way, we've invited him along. Lol."
But you're right, Steph. I did find that a bit confusing. I remember thinking to myself, did I miss that? I actually watched this film twice in preparation because I was worried that I'd missed something. So I watched it again today, and that was the only bit that I realised I didn't miss. And I think maybe I get that it was used for the surprise of, you didn't know that the bad guy was actually, you know, that guy that died at the beginning all along. But I mean, that totally went over my head.
Yeah, I mean, there's never a scene where we meet Gustav as Gustav?
Yes, at the beginning.
Is there?
I got this wrong. So isn't Gustav the guy who was using the man in the body bag at the beginning?
No, he was actually the
that's the son. The son.
He was the guy punching the guy in the body bag.
Yes, correct. That's what I thought. Yeah.
Yeah, sorry. Yeah.
So you do meet him. It's that guy who was... It's the guy that you mentioned at the beginning, Steph, with the machine gun.
Yeah. Wait, hang on. So, no, I get that. That's the son of the North Korean general. So he's the colonel, or whatever they call him. When do we meet Gustav? Before he gets transferred into... Before they swap the DNA. Do we ever meet Gustav?
Oh, no, that's the plot twist, isn't it? So that we are introduced to Gustav Graves when he jumps out of a plane.
Yeah.
And then has a Union Jack parachute and is talking to the press. And he's, you know, introduced as this kind of... He came from nothing to everything within like a year.
Yeah.
He discovered diamonds in... is it Iceland and out of nowhere?
But by that point,
it's not revealed who this guy is.
But by that point, he's already been. He's had his. So he's not really Gustav. He's the North Korean guy.
Oh, he's the Korean guy. Yeah, he's been through all that surgery and stuff because it's like a year later, whatever it is.
Yeah.
Or it's however later it takes, because James Bond is in like he's incarcerated for like 14 months, I think, or something.
Yeah.
So he's obviously going through that process.
So no, my
it could be clearer.
My query was. So I didn't miss a scene where it's like the North Koreans capture Gustav and they're like, right, we're going to put our friend into your body. I didn't miss that scene. That never happens.
No.
I think that's a good point. It's not like Gustav Graves was someone and then they took his DNA and put it into the North Korean guy. It's not like that at all. They just got some random English DNA and then made it up basically and put it into another career. He wasn't a person, because he was like someone that came from nothing. So basically his past is made up.
Oh, okay. Did not get that.
Yeah.
They definitely could have made that.
Oh, so you were led to believe... I get it. So you thought that basically Gustav Graves was this millionaire for about 30 years and then they bunked him off and then basically switched him out. Yeah. No, that's not what happened. Well, that's not what we're led to believe happened.
So he's just a body. He's just, and they've transferred the North Korean guy's DNA into random body, made up background. Right, got you. Okay, did not pick that up.
Yeah, they made up the background, because it's the conflict diamonds that they had at the start of the film is what he apparently discovers, which obviously he didn't, he already had them, and they just you know, he's got loads of money, so they just make up this new identity, and then, yeah.
Okay, got you.
Does that change the film for you, Steph?
See, in a whole different light now.
Yeah. If there's anyone still listening to this podcast, I hope it was maybe clearer for you if you watched this film. But for, I mean, I think maybe, well, at least two out of three of us are struggling here. Yeah. So,
and I think the only reason you get it is that you've watched it, what, 100 times?
With director's commentary.
I wouldn't say 100, Steph. Come on, more like 1,000.
Did you go to the cinema to see this with your parents, or literally was it just on DVD that you watched it?
I just got it on DVD. I think it's the first time I saw it. Yeah.
Yeah, I thought, I was just wanted to check because I think this film is like a 12, so I was trying to figure out whether Papa Lamond took you to see your first film, and it was
snuggly under his coat. With the sweets,
yeah.
We're not paying those prices.
Oh.
No, it was DVD. Yeah, definitely DVD. And as well, I think because in our house, I think because my dad's quite into like cheesy action films. I think he's not like a Bond, like you know, he's not really into that or anything. I think he finds it quite funny. It's like us. You know, it's a fun way to pass the time. And so we always used to have videotapes of recorded films off the TV, and a lot of like we had like the Pierce Brosnan Bond films, so I would have already seen the other three Pierce Brosnan Bond films before this came out, so I suppose I'm a little bit more inclined to
think
of it fondly. Yeah, the reason that I chose this one more than the others, I could have chosen the other Pierce Brosnan films just because it was my first DVD, like it was a gift to me. Like, not just, like, my parents, but it was mine, you know, so. Yeah.
Sorry, just the way that you keep it, this was my first DVD.
This was my DVD? No, you can't borrow it. It's mine, okay? I don't steal Lion King 2 off you.
Oh, Joe. I'm learning so much about
No
Joe.
One's allowed to watch it.
One of the things, when I was looking up and doing some research about the film, I found that Pierce Brosnan actually rated this film as his least favourite Bond film, which I found a surprise, actually, because I don't think it's the worst of the bunch, but I wouldn't necessarily assume that he thought it was his worst. Maybe he didn't feel like there was enough chest hair action in this movie compared to others. I'm not really sure, but I don't know what your guys' thoughts were on that.
So we know that he left after this film, so maybe it was just that kind of feeling of, oh, I'm done with this, maybe by that point. But I know that when he was... So his first Bond film was GoldenEye, and that was released to like rave reviews. People loved that film. And then, you know, Tomorrow Never Dies was all right, you know, it was good. And then World Is Not Enough was a bit weird, you know. And then this one was just, I think it was just seen as like cartoonish and spoofy. There's quite a few scenes in this film where you feel like you're watching Austin Powers,
yeah,
as opposed to a James Bond film.
With the chest hair.
Yeah, with the chest hair, exactly. And, you know, the Union Jack parachute and, you know, the cars that have, I mean... This is the thing. It's, you know, James Bond started off kind of having little kind of gadgets like an exploding pen, but we're getting to the point where an Aston Martin is invisible.
Yeah.
And it's a little bit maybe hard to believe. It's interesting if you know, the next film to come out was the Casino Royale, you know, Daniel Craig film, and it's so gritty in comparison. You can tell I think they basically took this film and said, let's do the opposite of that and see if it's any better.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I have to admit, I'm not really a Bond fan. Like, I've seen lots of bits of lots of Bond films, but there's not many that I've sat and watched beginning to end. Like, there were scenes in this film that I was like, oh, I do remember seeing this, but I don't think I ever sat and watched this film all the way through until today.
Mm.
And so, yeah, I I would struggle to compare it to other Bond films just because I don't have the knowledge. Like, I've definitely seen Casino Royale all the way through. I remember going to the cinema to see that. So that I feel like, what? When did Casino Royale come out? Does anyone know?
Was that about 2006-ish?
Yeah, I'd say five or six.
That's a guess.
Yeah.
So they'd left it like 3 years in between. So they'd obviously decided what not to do when they made that one.
Yeah.
And then they all seem to have kind of gone in a much more dark, gritty direction. So I think actually, yeah, I've seen more of the Daniel Craig ones than I've seen any of the old ones. But to be fair, I actually really enjoyed this film. I thought it was really funny. But maybe that's not what you want from a Bond film.
No, that is exactly what I want for Bond. I don't think you can take these films too seriously because it's a relic. It's like a dinosaur kind of genre. And if you know, someone getting killed with a chandelier is hilarious in any film.
Yeah, that was gruesome, wasn't it?
Yeah.
That was pathetic.
It was, yeah. That bit was gruesome. But I remember when Pierce Brosnan stepped down from the role and then Daniel Craig took up the mantle. I remember the filmmakers that were involved, like from the producers to the cinematographers, basically said that one of the criticisms of Bond films, especially Pierce Brosnan's compared to others, is that he goes through all these action sequences and doesn't really get hurt. And what I found when watching Casino Royale and Skyfall and Quantum of Solace is he gets really, really hurt. And he's also not... I think he's just a bit more human compared to the Pierce Brosnan era, so to speak. You know, he does get quite emotional at points. And I think that's, for me, what defines a lot of the Pierce Brosnan films. He's not a character that really opens up at all. He just makes funny little jokes and comments and makes girls swoon, and that's it. And you don't really connect to him. He's more of like an action figure, like, you know, as opposed to like an actual person you can relate to. And that's, I think that for me is the biggest difference, because like Steph, I've not really watched I think I've probably watched maybe 10% of the James Bond films, but most of them are the Daniel Craig ones. I've watched GoldenEye, this, and then I've not watched Die Another Day or anything like that, but I do know that, you know, most of the films, they tend to have, you know, really weak female characters, a bit cheesy when it comes to the evil geniuses that you know, reside over the films. But this film felt like it was the last of that, which is why I found it interesting. It felt like the last of the 90s era of action films where men pump out their chest hair and girls swoon, but you can tell at the beginning they're not really always going to swoon. Does that make sense?
I completely agree. And I think one of the reasons it might be one of the last ones is because it's got this kind of car. It's like, you can't make films like this anymore because they're sexist and all that kind of, and then you just play the James Bond card of, well, it's an institution and you can't change it because people will go crazy. It's like everything, you know, people are going crazy over. I think in the new James Bond film, they're going to have like 007 be portrayed by a woman. And, you know, it's like, you can't do that. And it's like, well, hang on. Like, you can.
It's a fictional character.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, I see the argument against, for and against it, I guess. You know, because the people are saying it is a fictional character, but he's a white male, so why would you have it as a female? But I think maybe they just want to take it in a new direction, because if you think about, I am really surprised at the number of films of James Bond. And I think, you know, in terms of the messages it's communicating about, you know, powerful men and, you know, these women that are just there for the sexiness, I think, you know, that message is quite dated. So I think maybe that's why filmmakers are looking to attract a new audience, or, you know, I'm not an expert on this, but I just think that's the feeling that I got from this film. It was very much like the last of an era of those films, hence probably why it was, you know, very early noughties, and, you know, it was just escaping the 90s era, and it felt like it could just just about do it.
Yeah, but I think that's probably why they brought in a character like Jinx, that she isn't the, you know, stereotypical, like, helpless Bond girl. She's, you know, she's got her own agency in this film. She's, you know, she's pretty badass, and she's not just there being like, oh, wow, Bond, you're amazing. Like, let's get into bed. Like, she does sleep with him, but I don't think it ever feels like he's taking advantage of her. I think it's like a very much a mutual thing. That's how it comes across in the film. So I think there is that that change happening. I am a feminist, and you know, I'm all for female empowerment. I don't know how I feel about a female James Bond, though. I just think if you're looking to attract a new audience, you know, you can do that with carrying on with James and just fleshing out the female characters and maybe making him not as much of a sexist slime ball. I don't think you need, I don't know, like, let's have something different. Like, yeah, I'd love a spy film where the woman was the main character and she was the kick-ass spy. Doesn't have to be James Bond, though.
Yeah, maybe it could stand on its own 2 feet and be a totally different entity that doesn't have to rely on the James Bond fan base. It could be good enough that it could do its own thing.
Yeah, that's what I want to see. Like, it is a shame that obviously the Jinx film was never made, but that's the sort of thing that I would want to see over, oh, okay, we've done James Bond, but we've made him a woman. Like, yeah. Why? Like, it is a fictional character, and I think, you know, I don't necessarily think he needs to be portrayed as a white male. Like, you know, let's diversify. But I think he is a man, and, yeah, I just don't think... I don't know, maybe it's controversial. I just don't think we should be having a woman play James Bond, but not because it's like, oh, it's James Bond and it can't be a woman. Just, yeah, let's have something different. Right. Let's give women a different thing to do.
I agree with you 100%. Yeah, yeah. Give them maybe better roles within this franchise and give them a different franchise altogether, maybe.
Yeah, yeah, definitely.
What they could have done, and I think they should have done, is after this film, I think they should have made a spin-off of James Bond's chest hair, where he just goes around Europe shagging all the birds, and it's just almost turned into like a porno. But then, you know, James gets a bit serious and then they introduce a female character. So you're pleasing both audiences, you know. The chest hair can just be out and about. It's got a little top hat, a cane, and it's just out on Bond Street shagging away. And yeah. I don't know what your guys' thoughts is on that. Yeah. But
he's terrible to female hair, but, oh, you know, well, he's an institution.
Exactly, yeah.
You can't change it.
I feel like you might have had a sexual awakening in this film, Max, with all the chest hair going on.
I think I may have, yeah. I didn't even spot that any other female was in it after seeing the chest hair. One thing that I was going to say is I totally didn't expect... Well, after the credits, I know that... during the credits, I know that Madonna does the theme tune. And I remember instantly thinking to myself, oh, gosh, yeah, I remember that song. It's so noughties. I love it to bits.
Yeah.
And then...
It's so catchy.
So catchy. I remember it being in the charts and it really did take me back, so that made me smile. But I didn't expect her to pop up in the film.
Totally forgot she's in this film. Because I was like, oh, yeah, like, I remember, like, the song was so iconic at the time. Like, I feel like maybe the music video is very similar to the opening credits, because when the opening credits started, I was like, oh, yeah, I remember the Scorpions. Like, that's weird. But I think it's because maybe they're in the music video. But yeah, totally forgot that she is actually in the film.
Yeah, she plays the fencing instructor, doesn't she? It plays that whole thing. Totally forgot.
Yeah, who forgets to do up a corset.
Yeah, I totally forgot that was her. Yeah. Did you notice that your friend was in it, Steph? Your mate from back in the day.
Who are we talking about? Are you on about... who are you talking about?
You know who I'm talking about. You know, so for anyone that doesn't know, this will be most people. Steph was on, were we on News Round?
Yes,
as a kid?
I was a press packer for News Round, my one claim to fame.
Yeah. And who were you meant to interview and who did you end up interviewing?
So basically, I was a press packer for the opening of the Lord of the Rings exhibition at the British Science Museum. British Science Museum? Maybe it was. Yeah, in London. And I was supposed to interview Andy Serkis. But I remember it was a really sunny, gorgeous day, and he just didn't show up. And so we were like, great, oh my God, like who, you know, I could tell as a, however old I was at the time, 11, they were like, oh shit, who's she going to interview? And basically they had this guy, Lawrence McCaw, who plays Lertz, the orc, in the film. He was there to like greet the press dressed as full on Lertz. So they were like, right, okay, you're going to have to interview this guy. And so I did. And he was literally the nicest guy ever met. Like, pretty scary interviewing him as an orc, but he was actually, he wasn't an orc. He's an Uruk-hai. Let's get
Chief
it right.
Uruk-hai. Chief yeah, Uruk-hai, I was waiting Steph, for that because there'll be 40 men on a forum bitching about you.
All right, yes.
Until 4 a.m. if you don't correct that.
Sorry, he was yes, Chief Uruk-hai. Yeah, and he was just lovely. So who does he play in this film?
He plays Mr. Kill.
No way! Henchman. Mr. Kill. Yeah. That's a name to die for.
See? These lines write themselves.
They do.
Death by lasers. You don't get that every day.
Oh, yeah, like right through his head.
Right through his head. There's so many, like, homage to like old James Bond films in this. I think it was this like a 50th anniversary or something, and there's like you can count almost the, like it's like if it was a drinking game of like spot, you know, the little tributes to the past James, you would be blackout drunk in the first 20 minutes. Everything from like the lasers, the jetpack, everything. It's crazy.
Yeah, it's the 40th anniversary of the film franchise.
we got to stay on this, otherwise those nerds in the forums will be right on his stuff.
just thought you'd like to know.
Yeah, no, I appreciate it.
I also didn't realise how, in general, the film was quite badly received among like fans and everything like that. So one of the bits of trivia that I found was Sir Roger Moore actively voiced his displeasure with the movie, citing the invisible car and weak CGI for being a low for the franchise in its entirety.
Really?
Yeah.
That's mad. I'm pretty sure his daughter or granddaughter was in it at one point.
Really?
She had some relation to Roger Moore had a cameo as like a stewardess for about 3 seconds.
Deborah Moore.
Oh, yep.
That's
Deborah Moore.
Deborah Moore.
She's an airline
there
hostess.
Yeah. And he's slandered the whole thing.
But yeah, I think like Steph, I went in watching the film thinking, I'm not sure if I'm going to like this, but I actually did. And I think what it reminded me of is all the 90s films and how they had such similar characters of okay, so that's the female love interest, that's maybe like the geeky sidekick or something like that. But I think there were just so many characters that I saw and I was like, yeah, I'm watching like a film from the early noughties. And it was actually quite appealing to some extent. But I went in not realising that I was going to like it, but I actually did. I really did.
Yeah, I have to admit that this film took me like 2 weeks to get around to watching. And it wasn't because I didn't want to watch it. Part of it was that I only had it on my iPad to watch, and I was trying to figure out a way to watch it on the TV. But this film is over 2 hours long.
It is shockingly
long,
isn't it?
It's a long film. And I think I was really enjoying it. I think it could have been 40 minutes shorter.
Yeah.
I mean, they could have wrapped up the whole thing in the first 10 minutes and just killed James Bond, couldn't they? That would
Yeah. Bang, he's dead. Done. On to the next one.
Yeah. Oh, gosh.
Wouldn't have had to see any surfing.
To be fair, surfing was one of the highlights for me. I was like, there is no way you're telling me that that's Pierce Brosnan.
Oh, I do love that. That's amazing. I didn't know as well until you told me, actually, that this was his last film in the franchise. That's amazing.
Yeah.
Wow. But, I mean, yeah, it kind of made sense. You could almost tell that he'd lost his passion for it.
Oh, yeah. He can picture Mamma Mia and think, that's what I want to be doing. I want to be singing on a yacht.
I feel like things definitely went downhill for him after this film.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think, yeah, let's have a look at what he did after this. So after this, he did The Matador. I've never seen that.
Never seen it.
The Ghost Writer.
I don't think I've seen that.
Butterfly on a Wheel.
I have seen that film.
Are you making these up?
No, I've seen that. That's one of those films where, you know, it's like 10 o'clock at night and you're flicking through the channels and this film started and I was like, oh, I might just watch it, and ended up staying up and watching the whole film. From what I can remember, it's a pretty wacky film. Some sort of psychological drama or something. I don't remember anything about it really, but bringing it back now, mentioning it.
Anytime anyone mentions Pierce Brosnan, I always think of a clip that Joe actually shared with me a long time ago of him with an Irish accent, and I can't unsee it. It's the best and worst accent. Have you seen this, Joe?
He is Irish, though.
He is Irish, Max.
Yeah, but you need. I don't know. You need to see this clip. You need to see this clip.
Okay.
I'll share it with you after this. But essentially, he's like angry or he's basically like shouting something in this really thick Irish accent. It gets to the point where he's just totally incomprehensible, and he's saying these words and like the audience can't understand anything he's saying, and it's quite famous for that. But I can't unsee Pierce Brosnan for that.
Right. Okay.
I know which clip you're on about. We'll share that clip on our Instagram. So if you really want to see it, follow us on Instagram. So find us on Instagram.
Lovely.
Okay, so the film. I think it's my week, isn't it? I'm acting like I'm surprised. I know exactly it is my week. But
yeah.
So the movie that I've chosen, I think you both will have watched. It's Uncle Buck.
Interesting.
I've never seen that film.
I don't know if I have.
Yeah. So I think I realised that all of the movies that I love, like, that are dear to my heart, they're all really late 80s, very early 90s. And Uncle Buck was one of those films that me, my brother and my sister, we watch. And if we're ever together or get round together at Christmas, we'll always watch that and then other John Candy films. So yeah, that is going to be my recommendation for the next episode. And I'm really excited, actually, for you guys to watch it and get your opinion on it. It is very dear to my heart. But at the same time, if you know, it was late 80s. So there's probably some some plot holes and some things to pick apart. But I'll be really interested in what you guys think of this.
That sounds great. I love John Candy. So I don't know anything about the film. I didn't know he was in it. But I'm looking forward to it now.
Thinking about it, I'm pretty sure that I have seen it, and I am excited to watch it again. I'm looking forward to this one. This will be good.
Yeah, it's one of those films that always comes on around like Easter time or Christmas. But yeah, it's a film. I'm not going to tell you anything about it, but it's a John Candy film, so it's he tends to do, you know, feel good films. So yeah, that's going to be the next episode.
Cool.
Great. Can't wait.
Amazing. Bye.
Bye.
Thank you for listening to the 90s Kids Movie Pod. We hope you enjoyed the episode. If you like what you heard, we'd love for you to rate, review and subscribe. You can follow us on Twitter and Instagram at 90s Kids Movie Pod and let us know which films you grew up watching. Goodbye.